Now for the sermon of Mr. Joe Horchick.
Well, you guys get treated to the Joe and Joe show today. Happy we could help out. It's nice to have extra manpower around when the boss is out of town. So it's great stuff. And Mr. Walden's traveling this weekend as well. So all three of the other speakers are all gone, the song leaders and everybody else. So it's nice to be able to have some of us here to be able to step in and help out. Well, I hope you all had an enjoyable week, especially with this nicer weather. Now, this is the kind of weather I could live with. This is good stuff. Warm enough to be outside, yet cool enough to cool down when you want to and need to in the morning and the evening. I sit out on my patio with a cup of coffee and read my favorite book in the morning, and I just love it. I love that I have to put a flannel shirt on to be able to sit out there. What a difference a year makes, right? It's really been crazy, really crazy. On the heels of the messages that we've heard, where we are reminded of being watchful about our own spiritual lives over the last several weeks, I thought it would be good to give us something along those lines to think about. And it also plays very closely into some comments that Mr. Buchanan made, I think it was last week or the week before, regarding how Satan's rebellion got initiated. Because there was a key ingredient in that that causes trauma beyond belief. Today we're going to look at one sinful aspect of life that sometimes I think we have a tendency to overlook. And as we've heard recently from Mr. Buchanan, it is the sin that played a huge role in Satan's rebellion against God. To begin with today, let's turn over to the Epistle of James. James 3, to be exact. James 3. I don't know if any of you are Winter Olympics fans, but next February, just a few months from now, they're going to schedule to be held in Beijing, China. I don't know if I didn't realize that or forgot about it, but given what's taken place over the last couple of years, I can't even imagine having the Olympics in Beijing, China. But they're going to be there after these last 2 years of craziness. But that being said, there are several events that I've enjoyed watching over the years in the Winter Olympics as well as the Summer Olympics. But in the Winter Olympics, the one thing that really catches my attention is downhill skiing. I just love that. I'm a skier myself. My wife's a skier. My kids are skiers. And it's just one of those kinds of things that it's just really beautiful. Of course, being out in God's world with snow on the ground and nice and cool and have to get bundled up, that's a nice thing too. Do any of you remember an Olympic skier by the name of Peekaboo Street? Anybody? Yeah, several of you. Okay. Her first name is spelled P-I-C-A-B-O, but it is pronounced Peekaboo. She won the Olympic gold medal in the Super G in 1998 and was inducted into the National Ski Hall of Fame in 2004. But she's more than a famous skier. In fact, between training on the slopes and traveling around the world to compete, she managed to get an education and earn a degree in nursing. Early in her nursing career, she worked briefly as an ICU nurse in a large metropolitan hospital. She did outstanding work. But there was a problem. The head of nursing had to tell her to not answer the phone at the ICU because of the confusion coming into the callers. Callers would connect with ICU and hear, "Peekaboo, ICU." True story? No. Peekaboo is not a nurse, has never been a nurse, and as far as I know, doesn't have any interest in nursing. But she gets the joke. Since she was a child, she's been teased about her name. Her parents got it from an Idaho town that takes its name from a Native American word meaning shining waters. So the Peekaboo ICU story was just a rumor. Entertaining rumor, but a rumor. This was such a big rumor that it actually made it to the quote-unquote Snopes website, the supposed validation website for humor, a rumor verification. There is a sin that our society not only embraces, but in many ways encourages. It seems that when we get a taste of it, we can't get enough of it. It's utterly destructive, and yet when we partake in it, we always want to justify it. It has probably the ability to destroy relationships between friends, families, churches, and yet we even invent reasons to be a part of it. The sin has been with humanity since the beginning, and it even played a role in the Garden of Eden. What is this sin? Before I answer that question, let's look at what James says here in James chapter 3. We'll see that this negative behavior is tied to one tiny part of our bodies. James 3, verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. He's talking about when you are expected to talk to people or get up and teach people, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to say things that you shouldn't say, say things maybe the way they shouldn't be said, and you're going to start making people stumble and fall. And as James put it, if you do not stumble in word of any kind, you're a perfect man. You're like the epitome of mankind because you're able to bridle the whole body. Here James is also stating that what we say, the words we speak, have an impact on our lives and maybe more importantly on the lives of other people. Then he gives us some analogies, verse 3. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body, except for me. I haven't learned that part yet. Look at those, also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires them to go. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. In other words, what we say can have a powerful impact on what happens everywhere in our lives. Then James sets us straight on how our words can have tremendous impact on us and others around us. He goes on in verse 6. He said, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. I mean, you could just stop there and contemplate those statement, that statement right there, and just wonder what in the world is he saying here? And if we're honest with ourselves, I believe all of us would admit this is very, very accurate. He says, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. James is saying that what comes out of our mouths can create what is tantamount to a firestorm. I don't know if you've ever been around a really bad fire. We had a pretty bad one here in Tucson last year after we got here, and I don't know how many of you were close enough to actually see how a fireball, firestorm like that actually works. There's movies that have been made about this sort of thing, and they're fascinating to watch because the power of a raging firestorm is, it's like you can't stop it. It'll just consume everything in its path, and it just roars on like a monster. And James is saying this is what's happening when we start using our tongue to cause damage. We can all probably remember that horrible damage that the fire caused here in Tucson. And then just this last year, all the fires that they had in California, the worst in their history. I mean, they had like 200 or 300 fires going at once, and they were all raging out of control. And the state was just a mess with smoke and contaminants. And what comes out of our mouths, James is telling us, has the capacity to do that kind of damage to other people's lives. Then James goes on to another set of analogies for us to consider. Verse 7. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. As you go back to Genesis 1, you see God told Adam, this is what I want you, take control of the animals on the earth. But no man, I'm going to read that again, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. I didn't look up what other translations say in this terminology, but I'm sure it's just as deadly and just as devastating and just as mind-boggling. Man has been able to do about anything he wanted on earth as God planned for him from the beginning. The one thing that we can't seem to control is our tongues. Then he gives us some very important, something really important to consider. Verse 9. He said, with it, our tongue he's talking about, we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude or image of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. And as long as I've been in the ministry, which is a long time, this has been one of the biggest, if not the biggest problem in the Church of God, universally. This kind of thing, gossip is what I'm talking about. Rumor becomes gossip. Gossip becomes dialogue. And it's been killing us since the Garden of Eden. Let's now turn to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15. Prompted my interest in this subject when Mr. Buchanan made the statement, I think it was last week or the week before, I can't remember, how gossip was the primary means that he used to get a third of the angels to rebel against God. He's telling them every conceivable story that they needed to hear to get them to follow his way of life. What a horrifying example. And that was probably before mankind was even created. So we've got an issue that's been going on for a long, long time, and it's coming from one source. And I think the next time we think about rumors or gossip or anything like this, think about what the source of that is. That is a deadly, evil source. Here in Matthew 15 is where the Pharisees were condemning Christ's disciples. Why? Because they weren't washing their hands before they ate bread. I know there are some people in this world that are OCD. They wash their hands before and after everything. We used to go out with a friend to restaurants, and he would wash his hands after he touched the menu. He'd look at the menu, close the menu, put the menu down, decide on what he wanted, go to the bathroom, wash his hands, and then come back to the table. I'm not going to criticize anybody for doing that, because if there's a fear and anxiety about something like this, do what you need to do to protect yourself. In his response, though, Jesus went on to say that these Pharisees were total hypocrites. He's explaining that what or how things went into one's mouth is really not the problem. The real problem was what came out of man's mouth. Listen to how Christ explains it here in Matthew chapter 15, beginning in verse 10. Matthew 15, verse 10. And when he had called the multitude to himself, he said to them, hear and understand. I'm going to explain something to you. Not what goes into the mouth defiles a man, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. Then his disciples came and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard you saying this? I know Christ didn't say this, but if it was me, I'd say, tough. Let him be offended. The disciples were unnerved at times by the Pharisees because they wielded such power over the Jewish people, and that's what the climate that they came out of. And when the Pharisees started exercising their muscles, people backed down a bit. Verse 13. But then Christ answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. We're not dealing with them now. They are blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind leads the blind, both are going to fall into the ditch. In other words, these Pharisees were not representing God the Father, but themselves. It became a very personal thing to them. And that power went to their heads, just like we see power today going to the heads of many leaders around the world, this country, this state, this city. It's an automatic thing. I've never seen power do such destruction. I mean, I remember Mr. Armstrong, for some of you who remember who he is. He said, power corrupts, but absolute power absolutely corrupts. The more of you get, the harder it is to control the human mind. It's a basic premise of life. And again, Christ is telling them that these guys are just hypocrites. And then verse 15, then Peter answered and said to him, explain this parable to us. We're not getting it. So Jesus said, are you also still without understanding? He was starting to realize that these guys were not quite up to par yet. Do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? That's a basic premise of life. We all know that this happens. But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they are what defiles a man. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man. It may be a health issue that he's taking a chance with, but it's not going to defile him. It's not going to kill him. It's not going to destroy him, especially spiritually. And that's what Jesus Christ is referring to, is the spiritual condition. And what are some of these evil things that can come out of our mouths? Rumors. Gossip. Complaining. Grumbling. Accusing. Comparing notes on someone or something. Maybe we're just trying to get the skinny or the scoop on something, on someone, by asking someone else about them. If you want to get the skinny or straight scoop about me, come and ask me. Don't ask somebody else about me. And don't ask somebody else about somebody else. Go to the person. If we disapprove of something that was said or done, we want to find others who agree with us so we can all talk about it. And then we get all worked up about it. And then we want to find somebody else that agrees with us so we can bring more people into the discussion and talk about it some more. And I don't know if you've ever noticed that when that happens, you get angrier and angrier and angrier. You don't quell anything. We've all done it. And sadly, some of us continue to do it. And I'm not indicting anybody in this room. I mean, we're talking to an audience of well over 100 and 150 people. And it's a universal problem. It's been a universal problem since the day man was created, basically speaking. But you know what? God hates it. I'm going to prove it to you. Let's turn to Proverbs 6. Proverbs 6. As we turn to Proverbs 6, let me share a bit of a self-righteous prayer with you. I can probably say this is my prayer because I've thought things like this in the past. But here's the prayer. Dear God, so far today I've done all right. I haven't gossiped. I haven't lost my temper. I haven't been greedy. I haven't been grumpy, nasty, selfish, or overindulgent. I'm very thankful for that. But in a few minutes, God, I'm going to get out of bed. And from then on, I'm probably going to need a lot of help. That's a good way to recognize us as humans. Yeah, as we're sitting there in bed and we haven't done anything and you know, our minds are just clear, we haven't had no sins crossed our thought processes at all. Oh, God, thank you. I feel clean. But I'm getting up now. And then it all starts all over again. I guess everything has to do with perspective. Even if it's the truth that we are spreading, if it can possibly hurt or cause damage to anyone else, it should not be repeated. And if we don't know what the ultimate outcome of the story is, then don't repeat it. The bottom line is that any form of gossip will eventually cause some form of division. And we'll see that God hates this more than about anything else on this planet. All we need to do is look here in Proverbs 6, and as we'll see, the Proverbs are chock full of advice about gossiping, tale-bearing, whispering, all meaning about the same: evil coming out of people's mouths. And as we've seen, Jesus Christ talked about it, and James talked about it already. We'll also see that Peter and Paul addressed the same subject. It was a problem back then, and it's a problem today. Solomon really hits home here in Proverbs 6, however. Let's begin in Proverbs 6 and verse 12. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mouth. It all starts with his mouth. And guess what comes out? The abundance of what's in the heart. He winks with his eyes. He shuffles his feet. He points with his fingers. Perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually. He sows discord. Therefore, his calamity shall come upon him suddenly. Suddenly, he shall be broken down without remedy. This happens because all that he does of all this kind of thinking, he's thinking it's just fine. He or she've done it for so long and so much of their lives, and they've made so many excuses about it, they're justifying it. They actually believe they're doing just great. They've been doing it for so long, it's like second nature. But eventually, they'll have to pay the price. And how is all this summed up? Something that God hates. Let's go on. Verse 16, these six things the Lord hates. Okay, now he's talking about six. But then he says, yes, seven are an abomination to him. What are those seven things? One, a proud look. Two, a lying tongue. Three, hands that shed innocent blood. Four, a heart that devises wicked plans. Five, feet that are swift to running to evil. Six, a false witness who speaks lies. And seven, and one who sows discord among the brethren. That can come from multiple sources. I've actually seen and experienced things in the past where somebody started spreading something around that they thought was positive and true, but it wasn't. And it came back to bite them. And it hurt the person that they were talking about. Flip over a few pages to Proverbs 16. It's simply amazing to me how the human mind works in justifying most forms of gossip. Especially if we're talking about someone who has done or said something that we think is wrong and maybe even perceived as a sin. We'll hear things like, did you hear that? Can you believe what she said? Wow, I'll bet that one's going to raise a few eyebrows. It can manifest itself in so many different ways. Let's hear again from Solomon here in Proverbs 16. Let's look at Proverbs 16 and begin in verse 27. Proverbs 16, 27. An ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lips like a burning fire. Can't wait to repeat it. He has to tell someone. Anyone who will listen. And that's the key. One of the keys. They need someone who's willing to listen. Goes on in verse 28. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. You know, it's almost comical when you just watch people sometime and you see them look around and get a little closer, and then they start to whisper. Why do we need to be whispering when we're at church with our brethren? This was really a problem about 15, 20 years ago. You probably remember situations where the split was getting ready to take place, and there was nonsense on both sides of the fence. And you'd see people come to church, especially if it was a larger church like we had in Sacramento at times, like 180, 200 people. And you'd see groups of five, six, seven people on this side of the room, and groups of five or six, seven people on that side of the room, groups of five or six, seven people in the back of the room, groups of five or six, seven in this aisle. And if somebody came walking by the group that wasn't part of the group, they'd stop talking. I'm sure you might have all experienced this or seen stuff like this. It's nuts. I've always asked myself, I wonder what they're whispering about. Verse 29, a violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. See, it starts corrupting the way we think about virtually everything in our lives when we start living like this and talking like this and gossiping and rumoring and stuff like that. It just starts destroying the whole person. He goes on in verse 30, he said, he winks his eye to devise perverse things. He purses his lips and brings about evil. Guess what? You know, and the minute somebody says, guess what? Man, we're all ears. We can't wait to hear what's going to come out of their mouth. And sometimes, I really believe this, sometimes we actually hope it's something terrible about somebody else that we can all talk about then. Turn maybe just one page to Proverbs 17 now. Proverbs 17. As I said, the Proverbs are filled with admonitions about gossiping and rumoring and talebearing and all those kinds of things. Just one verse here in Proverbs 17, verse 9. He who covers a transgression seeks love. In other words, quelling the process. But he who repeats a matter separates friends. This is very similar to what we just read in Proverbs 16. Turn over to one more page to Proverbs 18. We'll see an interesting analogy for gossip. Here Solomon is referring to people who behave like this as he calls them fools. He doesn't pull any punches here. Let's begin in Proverbs 18 and verse 6. Proverbs 18, verse 6. A fool's lips enter into contention. And I've met people, and you may have met people too in the past, that their core of their being is contentiousness. They want controversy. They thrive on controversy. And they say things, do things, trigger things just to try to get somebody worked up. I've had a couple of people in my life that I've known like this, and I will tell you, they have caused major, major damage within the church. It's just, you get to know that they're controversial about many things, and they create controversy. They love it so much. He says, a fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. They want to see you really get worked up. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. In other words, it consumes our entire being after a while. The words in verse 8 of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the innermost body. It's like tasty hors d'oeuvres. You just can't wait to get another one, like we've had once in a while here at the snack bar. Because somebody will put something together that's really unique and a little different, and it's tasty. It's, wow, that was really good. I want another one of those. And he's talking about words of talebearers become like this to other people. It's like a tasty tidbit, hors d'oeuvres of the soul. And they go down so smoothly. Let's drop down to verse 20. Let's look at this idea from a little different angle now. Proverbs 18, verse 20. A man's stomach shall be satisfied from the fruit of his mouth. From the produce of his lips he shall be filled. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. He's talking about, you know what? How whatever's coming out of your mouth, that's either going to bring peace or disruption to your life. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And we have a choice to choose how we're going to live our lives and what we do with our mouth and our tongue. Okay, we're on a roll here in Proverbs. Go to Proverbs 20 next, maybe two pages over this time. Remember when I said that all this type of person needs is someone to listen? If gossip doesn't have any listeners, they can't gossip. It ends. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation and you've actually tried to stop gossip. It takes some courage and it takes some wisdom and some tact on how to get out of it. Because you're basically telling the person, I don't want to have anything to do with what you've got to say. And you walk away. But when that happens, it can't go any further, can it? Look at Proverbs 20 and verse 19. Proverbs 20, verse 19. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. So here's our first pointer in dealing with gossip. Don't listen. Don't listen. Next, we'll see more about this mentioned in Proverbs 26. Let's turn over a few pages to Proverbs 26. This is one of the Proverbs of Solomon, which King Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. Here in Proverbs 26, we'll see how to stop gossip, as well as why it is readily acceptable by some people. It's a bit similar to what we read in Proverbs 18. Let's begin in Proverbs 26 and verse 20. Interesting analogy here. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And I learned that in becoming a smoker. Not a smoker, smoking smoker, but smoking in my smoker. If I don't keep the coals in that smoker going, whatever I'm trying to smoke is not going to get smoked or cooked because the fire is going to go out. So one of the things I need to do is make sure that fire keeps going and going and going and going. And I've learned a really unique way of doing that in a round smoker like I have. I'll share it with you later if you want. But where there's no wood, the fire goes out. And when there's no terror or talebearer, strife ceases. You get rid of the talebearer, you get rid of the strife. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindling strife. What a great analogy. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles again, and they go down into the inmost body. A repeat of what we read earlier. Just as if there's no wood, the fire goes out. If there's no listener, gossip fizzles out. Gossip just fizzles out. Let's now go back to the New Testament. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Let's get Paul's take on our subject today. Here in 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul is commending the brethren for their acts of service and love toward one another. As I know, Mr. Buchanan has commented about this congregation, El Paso and Sierra Vista, many times in the past. Mr. Tennant and I have both also witnessed those kinds of things. It's wonderful when you're an elder and you see people doing really good stuff. It makes your heart feel really good. It makes you feel like you're worth something as a leader of a congregation. He tells them here in 1 Thessalonians 4 to increase in these things, these good acts. But then he gives them an admonition on how to be living their lives overall. And he mentions one thing that is very apropos for today. Let's begin in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 9. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 9. But concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves are taught by God to love one another, and you live it. And indeed you do so toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more. Don't stop. Don't say, well, I've done enough. No, we've never done enough. We've never done enough random acts of kindness in our lives, especially for our brethren. I mean, we've got several brethren who are staying home because of recovering from sickness. I mean, we've got opportunity out the wazoo here to try to help, encourage, and comfort one another. Calls, texts, letters, cards, you know, maybe just stop buying and leaving a gift and don't let them know who did it. That's one of the most fun things to do because you've really got to be sneaky to do that. But it is fun. Then I love this next statement that Paul makes, blunt but accurate in verse 11. That you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business. And I know they don't, all the translations don't put it that way, but I love this rendition of it. Mind your own business. You got enough to worry about with your own life than getting yourself involved with other people's lives. And to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside and that you may lack nothing. In other words, we can be an example to people in outside the church, in the world in which we live. If we start living our lives like this more continuously and more regularly. Let's go to Romans 1 next. Romans 1. What a great piece of advice for all of us. I mean, all of us. To mind our own business. We'll see next that Paul lumps this whole idea of gossiping into a really, really nasty bunch of sins. First time I read this, I stopped in my tracks, so to speak. It's like, whoa! I had no idea or comprehension that that's how God feels about this kind of sinning. And yet, if there's one sin that we've probably all done, it's this, gossiping or rumoring. Here in Romans 1, Paul is addressing how all of us have sinned. But some have really gone over the edge, so to speak. Their thoughts and minds become very corrupt, and they become what he calls debased. Like I mentioned earlier, when we start acting like this, talking like this, and behaving like this, it starts affecting our entire being as a human and as a Christian. Their thoughts and minds became very corrupt, and they became debased, and he said that professing to be wise, they actually have become fools. Let's see how Paul describes this lifestyle behavior at the tail end of Romans 1 here. Romans 1, beginning in verse 28, Romans 1:28. Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased or reprobate mind, as the King James puts it, actually reckless and worthless, rejected and worthless. That's what this term means. A reckless and worthless, debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. And sadly enough, as we've heard from the pulpit in the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen this happen in our society. I mean, I've heard people say things that are in leadership roles at virtually every level of government that I can't believe what I heard out of their mouth. It's like, this is like listening to Satan talk. It's so evil. But this is a fruition of what Paul's talking about here in Romans 1. He said, being filled in verse 29 with all unrighteousness, listen to this, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they are all whisperers, better known as gossipers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, and unmerciful. That's a pack of sins, folks. And they're nasty. Guess what's right in the middle? Gossip. Right smack dab in the middle. Who, verse 32, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Again, it becomes a lifestyle. And when we let it happen and we don't stop it in its tracks, either our saying it or our listening to it, we're allowing ourselves to become oriented toward being debased because we're justifying in our mind saying and doing what we're doing. We see that the whisperers, gossipers, and talebearers are lumped together with some pretty ugly behaviors. And no wonder God, because God says he hates this type of behavior. As we get ready to wrap it up today, let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians 4. You ever think about why people seem to so readily fall into the gossip trap? Well, if you think about it, when individuals gossip, it seems to make them feel good about themselves because they know something somebody else doesn't know. We seem to get an ego boost when we observe someone else's sins and mistakes that we aren't committing. It's interesting how we don't respond that way when we commit the same sin. To gossip about it then seems to make us feel superior over the person that we are talking about, because we figured out their sin. And now we're going to dialogue about it with other people. After all, we're right, and they're wrong. What better justification do you need? Then we want others to side with us. And it's so interesting to me, because I've done it, it's so interesting to me how we want to have allies in this way of thinking. I think part of it is we want them to support and therefore justify us in another way. So we must tell our, we want others to see, to side with us, so we tell our side of the story to win them over. Then our friends repeat the story to their friends. And I don't know if you ever noticed, the story gets stretched. When I used to do training seminars for executives and companies all around the world years and years and years ago, we used to do this one exercise in the room, and I'd have maybe sometimes 300-400 people in the room. We break them up in groups of 6 to 10 people around round tables, and I had these little pieces of information that I would give on one piece of sheet, and I'd tell the first person at the table, read this, close it, put it on the table, and you tell the person that you whisper to the person next to you what you just read. And I told them, be as specific as you can. By the time it got through 6, 8, or 10 people at the other end of the table, there was no recognition to what was being said versus what was being read. Same thing with gossip, folks. You send, give a salient tidbit to somebody, and then somebody gives it to somebody else, and they give it to somebody else. By the time it gets to the next person, these people are murderers. Folks, this type of behavior, if it exists, and I'm not saying it does, it's just as a reminder, it needs to stop. Especially if we intend to make it into God's kingdom that we heard about in the sermonette. Remember, we were reminded a couple of weeks ago to watch and to watch after our own spiritual lives. This is worth watching. Paul tells us here in Ephesians 4 how we should behave in this regard. Let's begin in Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Ephesians 4 verse 29. Paul says, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice." Then he says, "And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." There's a lot that we covered here today. I hope you take it to heart, and I hope you think about it. And I hope all of us in this room, one, don't start rumors and gossip, but if we do hear something coming from somebody, become the stopper. Become the roadblock. Don't give it anything to work with. Take the wood away from the fire. Before we close today, I have a poem I found that discusses the subject of gossip. The author is unknown, but it really hits the nail on the head. If anybody would like a copy of the poem, let me know when I get home and I can email it to you. After the poem, I have an exercise that can help us stop the rumor mill and gossip trap. I'll share that with you. Something we can always benefit from now and in the future. The title of the poem is Nobody's Friend. My name is Gossip. I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I am cunning and malicious and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society. My victims are helpless. They cannot protect themselves against me because I have no name and I have no face. To track me down is impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I am nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it is never the same. I topple governments and ruin marriages. I ruin careers and cause sleepless nights, heartache, and indigestion. I spawn suspicion and generate grief. I make innocent people cry in their pillows. Even my name hisses. I am called gossip. You've probably all heard the saying, which I taught when I was taught when I was young, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Well, as we've probably learned today, that's not actually true. It's actually the opposite. I would venture a guess that more people have been hurt in our lives by words than sticks and stones. Here is a simple formula. And again, if you don't have time to write it down, I go too fast, I can send it to you. A formula that I came across that can help with the destructive issue of gossip. It is called the THINK, T-H-I-N-K formula. Before speaking of or discussing any person or subject that is perhaps controversial or probably hurtful, use this THINK formula. T, is it true? True. H, is it helpful? Helpful. I, is it inspiring? Like Paul told us, use it to inspire each other. Is it inspiring? I. N, is it necessary for you or for the other persons? And K, is it kind? Is it kind? If all the answers are not yes, all five of them, it would be best to keep our mouths shut. If someone brings it to you and it doesn't pass the test, tell them you have no interest in discussing it any further. And as was said before, if it exists, this sort of thing has to stop. And always remember, God hates it. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can definitely kill me. Have a great Sabbath.